Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week, the best Tuesday you've had all week long, and we are stoked to be joining you live in studio. With me is the Whiz Kid,
Matt Dixon.
All right. Are you really? I mean, is kid the right term, though?
You know,
I feel like the Whiz Young Man. No, that doesn't make
when
sense.
I start getting a bunch of wrinkles, we'll get rid of it. But until then, we're going to stick with it.
Okay, whatever you say.
Okay.
So I'm your host, David Littlejohn, and we're stoked to be here on this really just a crappy time in the stock market. So that's going to make for a very interesting show. By show of hands that I cannot see for all of my listeners out there, just how many people think that we have an ugly stock market? And if your hand is not raised, then I'm like, please call the office because we need encouragement.
Indeed.
I mean, it is just an ugly world out there. We are officially...
We're in bear market.
Bear markets, right? And so not B-A-R-E, right? B-E-A-R.
Mm.
Exactly. Bear market. You mean like summer where you could take your like short sleeves and stuff? No, no. I mean like 20% down from the peak levels of this market. Now, I do think it's ridiculous when people say things like, oh, well, we have a market crash. I don't even know how to define crash
because yeah. That just sounds what's that look like?
Inflammatory, right? But we do have like a market mess. And so that's the part where I'm like, all right, well, big old market mess. And what does that mean? It means there could be more downside is I think what it means.
Oh, yeah.
And many so it's hard to poll people on the radio here when we talk about, well, what might we do, you know, what do we think or what do you guys want to hear about? But I will tell you that there's a general underlying theme to this that we're going to spend a little time unpacking today.
Okay.
Like, why do you think the markets are down so much, Matt?
I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with inflation.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fed is over there scratching its head, raising rates, and we're expected for another big rate hike.
Right.
They're trying to get it under control, but I mean, I think the last report was 8.3, however they measure that.
8.6
is it
CPI,
higher now?
I believe.
Okay.
You know, there are lots of different ways that this gets measured. But, yeah, so far we're at 8.6 is the most recent that I've seen. And that is from the Department of Labor, published on June 10th. So I guess it was previously it had been 8.3, but now 8.6 is the average for the last 12 months. So it's up from 8.3.
The gas prices, that's not helping. The supply chains, that's not helping. We've had a few things that have been really driving it, I feel like.
Yeah. And we can, so we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what does this mean and what is it that the markets are looking for? Now, I do think that we have this tendency to overcomplicate the markets. The reality is there are just so many moving parts, but I try to strip this down to what really is driving the price of the markets.
I mean, if we want to get down to the nuts and bolts, you could say that there have been a lot of people selling and maybe not a ton of people buying.
Yeah, I mean, when you get down to supply and demand, that's ultimately it. And so what happens is there's just not a lot of appetite for purchase right now. So there's low demand and there's a lot of people that want out because of fear primarily. And so that is a high supply.
Right.
Okay, so in high supply, low demand, prices fall.
I guess the silver lining is the closer, you know, to the bottom of this, wherever that is that we go, there's going to be more and more buyers.
Well, right. And so there are lots of different ways to frame this. Let's talk about a few of them here. But before we do that, I mean, let's ask ourselves, you know, why are the markets down? Okay. If you find yourself going through a litany of reasons like, well, because of inflation or because of Putin or because of Ukraine or because of this or because of that, then I will say, okay, all of those are reasonable thoughts to it, but you're overcomplicating it.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually trying to give me the reason that everybody has in common. And the answer is, I don't know why for sure, but I could say a confluence of events have created this cocktail that lead us to have an imbalance of sellers to buyers. So people, it's the perception of the buyer, this is a lousy time to own stocks. And so the market declines. Interestingly enough, it's not just the perception that matters, but it's the aggressiveness of the buyer or seller. And it is the depth of the market that also contribute to this.
Right.
You know what I'm talking
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I mean, because it's like if the aggressiveness of the buyer says, I don't want to be in the market at all, and that carries through the markets and people do a full liquidation, that's a much different event than if someone says, you know what, I'm not too scared by this market. I'm going to maybe pull 10% out and let the rest of it ride.
Right. And I've seen over the course of my career, a lot of people riding the emotional roller coaster start to make binary decisions, right? Like all or nothing.
Sure.
I think that's a terribly dangerous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple things that I think we should point out, just data-wise.
Okay.
So first of all, how often have you heard, you know, for example, oh, well, the market's just lost X trillion dollars of market cap?
Mm, yes.
Have you ever heard that before?
The news catching headline articles. That's what I'm going to title that.
Like if the S&P 500, if we added up all of the stocks in the S&P 500, like the total value of all the companies,
mm-hmm.
and let's just, I'm just going to say, these are not real numbers, but let's just illustrate. So let's say it's worth $100 trillion.
That was the same number I had in mind. That's funny. Okay.
So about $100 trillion for all of the companies in the stock market.
Okay.
We're going to say S&P 500. So if they added up to this, and I don't know what the real number is, but that's what we're using. And then when we go through a bear market where there's a 20% correction,
mm-hmm.
right? Or not even correction, 20% decline though. So it goes from 100 trillion to 80 trillion. So people say, we just wiped out 20 trillion of value.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to you, and so I'm going to play Socrates with you, Matt, and sure. ask you questions is that accurate?
I mean, I think the way I would look at it is going back to, say, a year ago, and I would say, well, if we've lost 20% from January, where were we a year ago?
Well, so that, what are you trying to measure? I
would be measuring a percentage change from maybe the last 3 years and then comparing that to a year ago, okay. not necessarily trying to measure by the dollar value.
Okay, so you're talking about percentages, mm-hmm. but so you're delinking from market cap entirely.
Yeah, okay. I would try and delink because I just don't know that that's a fair way to analyze things.
So why do you think that's an unfair way? There's just so all of you mm-hmm. listening, there's not like there's a right or wrong answer to this one. I'm not necessarily even seeking an answer from Matt
right.
to get here. So this is not, and he's on his toes on this one. I didn't prep him for this either. But
that's relative, I think. I think where I'm going with this is to say that the amount of money that we're evaluating at is relative because at any moment in time, right, it's fluctuating, that total amount. So I don't necessarily think that to measure it by a dollar amount would be accurate.
Yeah. Well, if everybody wanted, so here's the thing. Market cap to me is, it's an interesting measure, but is it relevant?
I don't know that it is.
I mean, it is if you're like a small business and you're trying to sell your business and you want to know mm-hmm. what's the value of my company. But I think it's sort of silly. I mean, it's a novelty to measure the market cap of everything, to measure the market cap of the S&P 500. But is that possible to get? Like if you were an investor, could you somehow own the whole market cap of the S&P 500?
No.
Right. And not only that, if, like, let's pick a company. We have ABC company that's worth $1 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
If that company were to fully liquidate, meaning they were going to sell everything, it's not going to be worth $1 trillion. Right? Because you'd have to have demand go to zero. Nobody wants to buy it anymore. So who's going to buy it if everybody's selling it?
Right.
Like who's going to make the market if it's a complete liquidation? At that point, it's a bankruptcy. And then it's more like, well, whatever parts are left that people are willing to sort of scoop up That's the value now. And by the way, there are people that look at the market and try to value it that way. Their value investors look at the book value of a company. It's like, well, if we just added up all the parts to everything, what's all the stuff worth? You know, just the assets and the real estate and the vehicles and the tools and equipment and all the stuff. What's that worth? And they said, well, there's your book value per share. And then you compare it to the actual value per share and you start to go, okay, well, what are we paying for future earnings? Right? Lots of different ways to analyze a company, but in the end, what are they all doing?
They're trying to find a price discrepancy between the trading price and what they actually think that it's worth.
Yeah.
And I mean, and because I would say, those aren't always the same thing.
Yeah. And in simple terms, like, we're just trying to rationalize whether or not I want to own it.
Yeah. Is it a good buy?
Yeah. I mean, when Zoom, the
right.
video teleconferencing company at the beginning of COVID shows up, I mean, look at the stock price shoot up to, I mean, basically it's like, well, you're going to get paid for the next 30 years of income this year.
Mm-hmm. Because wasn't it like $350 a share?
It was something comical. Like,
yeah.
You looked at it and you're like, well, this company doesn't earn anything
mm-hmm.
yet, relatively speaking, but we're willing to bid the stock up because everybody's going to adopt Zoom. They're going to make a fortune. And then when the world started to reopen again, stock starts to collapse because the use case has changed.
Yeah, that kind of blew my mind, right? Like Google exists. Google Meet exists. Yet we're going to value Zoom on the level that it's like,
lots
I mean, it came
Skype
back to reality,
was there,
but yeah.
FaceTime was there and Microsoft Teams was there.
Right.
And like, there's tons of different platforms, but Zoom somehow became the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Or how about DocuSign? We're all going to do digital signature. By the way, DocuSign's down like 75-80% from peak right now. I think it fell like 20-something percent just either in the last few days. So there's another example of, well, everybody thought
this
for
is
a while,
like,
it's worth it. It was a feeding frenzy of buyers, right?
This
all
is,
the lemmings.
Yeah, we're going back a couple weeks to our prior conversations of spec tech.
Spec tech. Yep.
Yeah.
Those and so why does this matter? Because we've got to talk about inflation. We got to, you know, that's the whole point of the show is like, how's the market going to digest inflation and why does it care? So what inflation is going to do is it's going to influence buyers and sellers. It's going to change their opinions of the market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question is how and what does that mean for us as investors? And what I'm telling you is there's really not a right or wrong answer. There's going to be a bunch of theoretical answers. And then we have to parse out which one makes the most sense for us as investors, or what do we think is the major theme that the market's going to pick up on? And can we try to get in the center of that trend?
Are we going to theorize on that later?
We're
in
totally
the
going to theorize on
oh,
that.
Oh, man, that's right? Going to be fun.
But they're going to make us take an evil profit break
okay.
first. So I think we got to do that. So, all right, there's the music. That's what it means. So stick around. And when we come back, we're going to talk more. What does inflation mean for you? All right, that and more. But first, these very important profit messages. So this is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to True Wealth Radio Show, where
David's barely alive. He almost sneezed himself out of this world.
Right in the middle of it, I don't really have allergies or anything, but apparently I did get to sneeze during the break.
You're so allergic to inflation, David.
That's what it is.
You're getting the inflationary sneeze.
So welcome, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. Those of you on the live stream, we do see the comments coming through, so it's good to see everybody, and thank you for those that have offered blessings.
Where can they find this?
It's currently live on both Facebook and YouTube.
So just go to Little John Financial on YouTube and click on the live videos.
It's streaming on my personal Facebook page, our business page, and then on YouTube as well. So what I want to talk about now, here's the next segment. Let's get into the goods here. There are a lot of different ways that inflation gets measured. And the reason we wanted to talk about this is when our investment committee got together this morning, one of the things we talked about is what's the major themes going on in the market? And inflation was kind of the takeaway. The first one was, darn, gas prices are high, right? And they are. In fact, here's my question to all of you listening. Has your behavior changed because of gas prices? Right? Do you drive differently now or drive fewer places?
I did finally put my truck in eco mode the other day.
Oh my goodness, it's a huge impact.
Yeah,
right there.
I saved a full mile per gallon, okay?
Gone to eco mode, changed the shift points in your truck.
That's
which
right.
Just goes to prove shift happens.
That's going to be a radio promo.
Indeed. So how do we measure inflation? Okay. Well, interestingly enough, the government likes to track lots of different ways, and there are probably tons of ways, but we want to talk about inflation because this is, it's very, very relative. And we're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk a little bit about the yield curve. Okay. Inflation and yield curve. Because I think investors, if you get a better handle on some of these moving parts, it'll give you a sense of the themes that are really driving what's going on here. Like it's to a certain extent, it explains why the markets are behaving like they are. But hopefully it will also give you a little bit of a grounding in like, well, what does this mean and what ought I do? Okay. And then you have to frame that as careful because we don't offer investment advice on specific investments. But strategically, I think there's some things that you need to consider. So first, Matt, how do we measure inflation? Like, where'd the 8.6 figure come from?
Well, I know one well, I guess, and that's CPI.
Right, which stands for?
Consumer Price Index.
Okay. So what, first of all, do you know what governing body measures CPI?
You know, I actually don't, so surprise me here.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay.
Okay? And this is not super important. It's just interesting to know because there's more than one government agency that tracks inflation.
Okay? What's the other?
So the other one is the Bureau of Economic Analysis is one of them. And then also, and this is interesting, there's the Federal Reserve system
has
their
different own
measures, right? So like there's the St. Louis Fed or the Chicago Fed or there's the Atlanta Fed, and so the New York Fed. There's these different Federal Reserves, and they all have their different research bodies.
Is there much of a discrepancy in their numbers? That's what I'm kind of curious about.
Not necessarily, okay. Right?
But so they're all kind of on the same page, relatively?
Not necessarily. It depends. Oh. They measure different parts for different reasons.
Gotcha.
Right? So as an example...
So there's not a ton of redundancy where they're measuring the same thing. Looking in different ways.
There's just not agreement, right? So,
okay.
As an example, personal consumption expenditures is different than CPI, Consumer Price Index, right? That's PCE versus CPI. And so PCE gets measured by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, where CPI gets measured by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, right? So there's going to be these different versions of what is being measured.
Sure.
And then within those, there's different things too. So I know as an example, this is not for inflation, but for gross domestic product, which is measured by the other group. I keep toggling back and forth because I don't even have them memorized.
Right? Like, so many of these things to remember.
This one's measured by the Bureau of Economic Analysis, right? So they do GDP. Well, the Atlanta Fed has a version that they call their GDP Now, which is a faster moving statistic, and they use some different underlying elements to track.
So do they like remove a few layers? Like, do they take energy out and just look at, like, that'd be interesting to do like a full breakdown and look into the depth of like how they measure this.
There's so many ways. Like, for example, you could look at the CPI, right? Consumer Price Index, or you could do core CPI, which removes food and energy, mm-hmm. or then you could just look at food and energy. Right? So the non-core parts right. of CPI. There was a term, I don't even remember where it came from, a friend of mine showed it to me, called sticky CPI versus something else. And basically the sticky CPI is lower. That's the stuff that once it changes price, it tends to stay there. Mm. So like wages, right? Wages historically don't contract much. You'd have to go through a pretty significant contraction period in the economy. So you go through a recession. Okay, and if you don't know, raise your hands again, unless you're driving, if you know what a recession is, because we're going to quiz Matt and see if he knows what the definition of a recession is.
Okay.
Matt, what's
are we
a
doing
recession?
It right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
I think,
no Google time. We're just going to catch him on his toes.
I think it was, three or four consecutive quarters of economic down? Two?
No, it's two.
Two?
It's
two. Okay.
Yep. One is a warning, but two consecutive quarters. We call it a recession.
Was it six that you have to be?
I think beyond six, and we start to call it
depression.
Depression.
And now, have we gone past six since the 30s?
Not that I can recall.
Yeah,
even
I don't think so.
In 2008, we didn't have that long.
Right.
Right. And that was the worst one that we talked about, the Great Recession, right? Mm-hmm. Which was this severe recession, but technically didn't last.
It didn't last long
more
enough.
More than 6 quarters.
So for all of the people that are like, this is going to be 5 or 6 years of pain, it's like, well,
yes.
Historically,
right.
You know,
and
over the last 100 years.
Yes. Yeah, so like bear markets,
90.
As an example, now that we're in bear market, mm-hmm. side note from our inflation conversation is shortest bear market, I think, is about 30 days. Which mm-hmm. happened in 2020.
And we've actually seen this for a while now. We're in month six. So,
well
of the downturn.
We've been declining
right.
for 6 months, or almost 6 months.
Right.
And the average was something like 13 months. The longest was like 5 years to get out of a bear market.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, one of those was the Great Depression.
Right. So excluding that.
If you exclude the Great Depression, the statistics get better, right?
Right.
So
it's kind of an outlier almost.
So it's really one of those deals where if you can adjust your time horizon and patience level,
mm-hmm.
it would radically benefit you. Okay.
Yep.
My sense is that despite the chaos that is our system right now, things are largely going from lower left to upper right. In all categories, right? We live at in the United States, we have such peak levels of human comfort,
mm-hmm.
right? And that's not to say that there's not tragedy in the world, and there's not crime, and there's not terrible circumstances for individuals. But in aggregate, people are so comfortable, and they have access to the internet and other resources. And I'm not saying there's issues with food security or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are real issues. But in general, things are better now than at any point in history.
Right.
As far as your personal comfort and your access to entertainment and all the other things that come with it. It's like we have air conditioner.
Right.
Right. We have food that's readily available. Even in periods when it's hardship, right, there's still food available. It's not starvation. It's like changing what's available. And I'm talking about for the United States largely. You know, we are at a point of inventing problems to complain about because we have so few hardships, right? We've developed much more exotic social issues than would have ever occurred to people 100 years ago who just wanted to not starve.
You know, and I actually appreciate the word there, developed, because we really have manufactured issues.
We do.
Yeah.
Right. And for the people that are really, really passionate about it, this may be very, very insulting. And I kind of go, it's perspective here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all a matter of perspective that we really have it made in most perspectives. And so we get, then folks get into, well, you know, it's the game of more. And if you never heard me say this on the True Wealth Show, I'm going to say it now and, you know, take this in. The game of enough is the game to play. The game of more, you'll never win. Okay? If you want to be unhappy in life, play the game of more. You will always be unsatisfied. It's difficult to be grateful for anything. Everything becomes a contest. And if your wallet is measuring your self-worth, you're doing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We get it. If you're broke, it's hard to be happy. But the game of enough is a way more sensible game than the game of more.
Sure.
So just keep that in mind. Now, back to home base.
Okay.
Okay. This whole inflation discussion, okay? We're talking about the different ways that we measure it. Like CPI is a way. CPI less food and energy is a way. Personal consumption expenditures, right? What are the things that people have to buy, right? So that's a different one. Personal consumption, excluding food and energy. Well, you know, we keep wanting to exclude food and energy. And, of course, what are the most expensive things right now?
Food and energy.
Food and energy.
Let's not exclude those.
Yeah. And then there's all these other ways. So let's just, at this point, I don't think there's any argument over whether or not we have inflation.
Yeah.
I will also tell you some measures of inflation I've seen are approaching close to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how we measured inflation, like which goods and services were tracked a while ago, looks different. So we also have a question, by the way, you know, how do producer price indexes figure in? So we'll address that in a sec. But if you look at the... God, that just, every time I do that, if I look at a question in the middle of
it, just the show, derails, yeah,
derail, huh? Me, because I'm like, really, you want me to talk about that too? But the home base idea that, you know, we have lots of inflation, some of it very, very high. The reason I think we don't use the super high measures, I don't think it's political. Believe it or not, there's some people out there go, oh, so and so wants to say, no, spare me on that one. I think it's because it's inflammatory. You start to get kind of kooky behaviors when you take some of the smoothing indicators out.
Mm-hmm.
Smoothing indicators, it's like a filter, right? If unfiltered data, then, you know, you get the real extremes of the, you know, statistical extremes that start to make things look maybe abnormal. And so when you see a 17 to 20% inflation print,
you almost make the problem worse just
you scare people, for one. And so I don't think that we have nearly that high in inflation in aggregate, but there are areas of the economy that we do. And mm-hmm. you know, an example would be things like the radical escalation in oil prices.
Fertilizer.
Yeah. Fertilizer spiked up. A lot of commodities spiked up. But then we also see those same commodities, they're just way more volatile. So wood prices, lower now than they were 5-6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're historically cyclical. You know, they're agriculturally related, but there are also market dynamics at play. And so you see demand destruction when things get too expensive, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the old thing about like beef prices skyrocket and then people buy less beef, right?
And they buy more chicken and then the price of chicken goes up because there's more demand.
You know, but I don't think you can invest in Chick-fil-A. I think it's privately held. So there you go. But that is and you know, it's fun. We've got my buddy online, Evan B. Farmer, who's he's the one who's commenting. He says things like fertilizer are ridiculous. That is true, right? There's mm-hmm. been a major supply disruption because of the war in Russia, and then there's also been a certain amount of like a run on things. Everybody panics, and so it's like, oh, toilet paper and now fertilizer. So that's gonna drive an imbalance.
Yeah, and I saw that Europe's like second largest producer shut down. And so when you mess up the supply chains, that also drives prices.
Yeah, yeah. So we will let's unpack some more of this. As I'm looking at the clock, we're running a tad long here. So yeah, what we'll do is let's grab a quick break, and when we come back on the flip side, we can talk more about producer price index, and let's talk a little bit about wholesale price as well.
Okay.
First, this break. This is Dave Littlejohn
and Matt Dixon.
Yeah, True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show, where if you were just joining us, one, we are live streaming, so you can grab us on Facebook if you'd like to check us there, or YouTube, both live streaming. And if you're going to miss it, it will also be available as a podcast.
Yes.
Right? Available at Shameless Pug Matt.
How about littlejohnfs.com?
Very good.
Perfectly under the shameless. Educate tab.
Nailed it.
Educate yourself.
Yeah. So my good buddy Evan B. Farmer asks in the comments during the break, and we want to bring this up, a discussion about PPI versus CPI. Okay. Now, since the theme of today's show is what do investors need to know about inflation?
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, what is, we talked about CPI's consumer price index. What is PPI?
Performance price index?
Producer price index.
Darn.
Right? It's okay. There's not industry tests to learn this stuff to get into the advisory world, because you actually don't need that for financial planning. This is just like that armchair economics degree that you earn over the years of doing this, right? So the producer price index is a survey that tracks what it costs, like it sounds like, to produce things.
Okay.
And so what we saw was a CPI print over the last 12 months of 8.6%. Now, do keep in mind, that's not 8.6% higher than last month. Last time we measured, it was 8.3. Now it's 8.6. What that is a 12-month look back saying from 12 months ago, we're this much higher than 12 months ago.
Okay.
So we're seeing the trend is higher, but the interesting thing, but it's not like a month over month compounding effect. Can you imagine if we were increasing at 8% per month?
Well, then our money wouldn't be worth anything.
By the end of the year, that we would be hyperinflation. Right? Yeah. We would legitimately be at a point where it's like, well, gosh, in a year, it's
$100 for a loaf of bread or a McChicken.
Yeah. You're like, well, that's just not going to work. Okay. The PPI, why that's important is it's actually been measured higher. The May print for PPI, if my data source is correct, was 10.8%. And the question would be, why is the PPI higher than the CPI?
Maybe because companies haven't started to fully price in the cost of production yet.
Right.
They're just making less money.
It's basically coming out of the margin of producers.
Sure. They're the ones that are kind of absorbing part of the blow.
Yeah.
So it's getting passed on to the consumer, but it's also dinging the people that are manufacturing and producing.
It's affecting margins. Now, this is important to the stock market.
Okay? Because earnings will shrink?
In theory, yes. If it's coming out of profit margins, unless your profits in general are increasing, right? Because it's not just the profit margin that matters to analysts, but the total profits, right? Hey, you're a billion, multi-billion dollar company, and your profits were $100 million a year, and that's a 10% margin. Next year, your profits are $150 million per year, but it's a 9% margin.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you made more money. But as a percentage of the total, you had less total efficiency, but you made more money, right? So it costs more, but you made more. Okay, so your margins may be shrinking, but your total profits are improving. Okay, well, the issue with PPI is it's suggesting that the cost is going up, but if it's going up faster than CPI, it also suggests that the producers are potentially taking the haircut. So they're taking one for the team before the consumer feels it.
Right, and that can only go on so long before prices have to raise, and then we see more inflation.
Well, that or it would suggest that more inflation will likely appear on the tape, as we say, right?
Mm-hmm.
It would show up in the future numbers that there's still more inflation to watch out for. So that would be one of the economic theories that you'd propose, or the economic outcome of this as well. If you've got these numbers that are disconnected, either with inflation coming down with higher rates, then the PPI should start to decline, or CPI is going to continue to be pushed higher. This also, incidentally, is why the Federal Reserve is painted into such a corner.
Sure.
Right? Because and what that means is, like, do they have an option about raising rates or not? And one might argue, well, sure, you can have just make the wrong decision and not raise rates. But the market is now expecting 3/4% rate hike tomorrow. Is it tomorrow now?
Yeah.
Well, Wednesday, right? So today's Tuesday. So they're meeting today and tomorrow, and they're expecting the day to be released tomorrow afternoon. So when that tomorrow afternoon Eastern time, right? And so when that occurs, then we would say we're the market's now handicapping as if we were expecting 50 basis points, right? Remember, 100 basis points equals 1%.
Yep.
So 50 basis points is 0.5%, and now the markets are handicapping or starting to price in the expectation of 75 basis points because these data points are not coming down, right? Federal Reserve started raising interest rates. They expected to see CPI begin to decline. It continued to go higher. So the markets have kind of panicked. You're now, and can you see how the data fits together now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, wait a second. If PPI is higher than CPI and CPI is still going higher, that means potential profit crisis for more companies in the market. We better discount future values and the price goes down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, all of this to say it's still just a game of who's going to rationalize what price they're willing to pay.
And how much of it's already priced in. How much is the market reading into this?
Exactly. Did they already bake that into the cake? And now they're saying, like, well, if the Fed comes out with only 50 basis points and we thought it was going to be 75 basis points, woohoo, that means
not
it's
that,
good.
Not that you can predict this, but how much of it do you think is already priced in? If you just had to guess, what's your gut tell you?
Oh, so this is the old theory of efficiency, right?
Mm-hmm.
The efficient market hypothesis would posit that 100% is priced in.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're pricing in, I think the real question is not what's priced in, but what unknowns may yet occur,
mm-hmm.
and how might you price in the probabilities of those
right.
unknowns?
Right.
And because I don't know them,
I can't really answer
the question.
Yeah.
So all I can do is take an educated guess.
That's
right?
kind of where I'm leaning with
and,
this.
Well,
it's like
educated,
we just don't know how much of it's priced in.
Yeah, but I'm willing to do dumb things like take educated guesses on the air.
Oh, okay.
I'm crazy, right? You're not supposed to name a price
wild.
Or a time at the same time, but I'm, you know, it's that time of the day and mm-hmm. we're rummy. So I would say that the Federal Reserve, I believe, is behind the power curve of policy. I think they probably will be forced to raise it 75 basis points.
Mm-hmm.
They will continue to say that they are data dependent. But I think that this thing is quite challenging right now. And I think that the confluence of events has been underestimated.
Mm-hmm.
And some of this is, you know, my own projecting. Right. When I say underestimated things like the labor force participation rate being a significant problem, but they're saying it's not a significant problem. I know too many people trying to hire that can't, so they can't run their business.
So you think they're undershooting that?
I think that they're underselling some of the structural problems of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the idea that data wonks are sometimes out of touch with the reality of the marketplace. And just like the gap between CPI and PPI, I think that what they're inferring from the data is not inferring aggressive enough for what's really happening in the marketplace.
Okay.
And so by the time they get caught up, I think it's going to be like, oh, now they may even overshoot it, right? Like, oh, now we got to lower rates because we were successful at killing this thing and we shot too far. And now we got to try to spool it back up. And why does this also make sense? Go look at the yield curve. If you wonder what the heck I'm talking about, now you have to stick around for the last segment where I explain to you what is he talking about and what does he mean by the yield curve. But that's a message to come right after this. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Walk me through it. I want to see these visions, okay?
Yeah. All right.
David's going to give us visions.
Welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show.
It's about to get wonky.
And I'm not even sure if it is, but thanks for tuning in, everybody. And if you're just joining us, you can grab a podcast. We've also got a live stream going on at Little John's Little John Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. It's also on the YouTube. So we're all there. And I promised at the break we'd talk yield curve.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because the yield curve is telling us some interesting things. We've talked about inflation.
Right.
And we've talked about the gap between CPI and PPI. Mm-hmm. Right. Remember, consumer price index, which says, hey, inflation's at 8.6%. And then the producer price index is at 10.8%, which suggests that producers are eating it on this one right now. Right?
Yeah.
They're actually getting hurt more than the consumer. So their prices are going up even faster. Either that or because of their prices going up so much, they're passing a lot more on, and it's fueling the inflation feedback loop, right?
Yeah.
Their products cost more, so it costs more for the consumer, which drives up inflation, which drives up their costs more. So we got this inflationary spiral. So the Federal Reserve is like, we got to do something about inflation. What are we going to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
They start raising interest rates. And remember what's really happening. Under the hood, when interest rates rise, you know what we're being told as investors?
That to borrow money, you're going to have to give a better rate.
Well, yeah. No, the person borrowing is going to have to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you're out there buying bonds, remember, you're making a loan when you buy a bond.
Yeah.
I know that's backwards of what, but if I buy a bond, I'm making a loan. I'm buying a loan, right? If I buy a government bond, I'm loaning my money to the government. They're going to pay me interest. And then at the end of the time period, they're going to give me back my money in a balloon payment.
Right.
So that's what a bond is. Well,
so long-term rates should be higher than short-term rates. You would think.
Historically, long-term, it should be the longer you tie up your money, the greater at risk it should be.
But lately, things have changed.
That's not the case. We have an inverted yield curve. This is a big dog whistle in the economic world because historically speaking, when that occurs, it signals a recession. And it's been a very effective signal that a recession is on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But where's the Fed stuck on this one, right? And if you think about borrowers, right, if you're going to make a loan, I don't want to make a loan and get paid back with less than I'm lent out. But in an inflationary environment, you're effectively saying, oh, sure, I'll lock my money up for 10 years, get paid 3%, and inflation's running at 8%.
And just no one's going to do it.
Yeah, why would you do that? That's like a knuckle.
Well, someone's going to do it, but
the only reason
it's not going to be popular
is because they need to hedge other things.
Sure.
So they need a security blanket, if you will, so they can do this to hedge something else.
They need someplace just to place the money.
Right. And so you'll see that when you need to, you know, offset a corresponding item, and so they're balancing each other out so that you can be neutral. But largely, you're not going to see people do that, right? So you're going to see bond prices fall until interest rates match the higher rates of the marketplace. And so it's going to cost more to borrow money. And so that's why mortgage rates go up, for example. If rates go up, who's going to give you a low mortgage rate when they have to make up for inflation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is pricing risk. It's part of the story here. Okay. So if rates are going up and short-term rates are high and long-term rates are low, Fed's really got themselves a conundrum here. Because when they raise rates, it's what they're effectively saying is the economy is telling us it's going to slow down. They need to slow the economy down. But if they overdo it, right, then the economy slows down too fast and they have to actually try to flatten the yield curve back out. So now they got to lower rates again. And the problem is it's like moving a giant ship in the water, right?
Mm-hmm.
Try to turn an aircraft carrier around quickly.
I was imagining someone just like burning the pancake, like, oh, they turn the stove up because it wasn't cooking, and then you end up burning it. Turn it back down.
That's a pretty good one, too, burning the pancake.
Yeah.
Like, the Fed is really stuck, aren't they? Because
they don't know where to set the stove.
And that is actually a great analogy, because setting it at the right temperature to balance things,
mm-hmm.
the reality is it's unlikely to happen.
Right.
You're going to constantly be varying the temperature of this economy in the form of interest rates. And for a while, the Fed did pretty well. I just think that when COVID hit, it was like
it threw them a curveball they just couldn't hit.
Well, the Fed could only do so much, right? They mm-hmm. can manage rates to keep them low, but it's really difficult when you get the kind of stimulus that the government, the type of direct money printing and injection of capital into the economy, as if that wasn't going to have an effect. I got news for you people. Like, we all saw it coming. Not even JV, we're talking freshman squad economist, armchair economist, okay? Like, I just read it on a headline in a Google news feed kind of economist could tell you, you're going to print how much money?
Right.
And that's not going to have any issues in the economy? Like, no, nobody said it. People rationalized it. Sure. Like,
well, yeah.
You know, I'm like, well, I want the money. I want the stimulus because the government shut it down, and so I need it. But printing money doesn't actually make value occur.
So going back to the Fed for a moment. So hindsight's a little 2020. The yep. Fed's been catching a little bit of heat because people are saying, hey, you didn't come out swinging hard enough. You were a little bit behind the eight ball. You should have been more aggressive with these rate hikes. Do you think that they should have been a little bit more aggressive out of the gate? Because, you know...
Yes.
Yeah.
That's my answer. And it's easy to armchair quarterback this
sure,
after
it is.
The fact. That's not a hard one. I think where they were ridiculous, and I do mean ridiculous, I've kind of said this for a while mm-hmm. in advisor...
Just shirt, slow whatever. To pull the trigger?
It's not that. Like, they kept saying inflation was transitory.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, you have invented a term. Right?
Oh.
Like you conjured something to try to rationalize your behavior.
So you weren't buying that at all.
I wasn't. I've been saying this for probably the better part of almost 2 years. And this is stuff that I could actually document some of it by going back into like my blog posts.
And the podcast on the radio.
And so you go back and look at this. And what you would see is I've been saying that the dual mandate has been crippling the Fed for a
while. Expand upon that, the dual mandate.
Dual mandate is low interest rates and low unemployment. Measuring the unemployment, like they sacrificed for employment when COVID hit. It was like nobody had jobs, and so they had to find a way to conjure jobs. So they kept inflation low to allow the job market to catch up. But by the time the job market had caught up, inflation had already, the horse was out of the barn, mm-hmm. and they had a problem. So, you know, they're out there running around in the field with no fence trying to catch this horse. Meanwhile, the job market has gone nuclear and we have wage inflation. And so it's
you're
that's
right.
just where we're at. And like, guys, you know, I think there was a combination of like hoping they were right. It's like, we think it's transitory. And then, you know, the supply chains just kept getting worse.
Do you really
worse.
Think they thought it was transitory? Or
I think they did.
You think they really were convicted?
So not everybody did. There wasn't agreement in the Fed. Lots of people
right.
were more hawkish. Lots
so
of
who does the blame fall on? Because that's the American way. You got to blame someone. So
the
let's
active
just...
Fed governors that get votes. Right, so they have mm-hmm. they have members,
so
and
the board.
They have people that give up. So the Fed gets to own this in the end because mm-hmm. they were the ones that.
So it's not all on Jerome Powell's shoulders.
No, Jerome Powell's the guy that gets the blame for it.
Okay, so we'll point the finger at him.
Yeah, I mean,
sure.
He's the chair, and so he's driving the narrative and choosing what comes on the agenda and so forth. At least as far as I understand. So,
all right, Jerome, you heard it right here. We're calling you out. We're pointing the finger.
No, I mean, I'll also call out Janet Yellen as the Treasury Secretary.
Oh,
who's like,
yeah.
Oh, it's you know transitory.
She
kind of
just passed the buck too.
And I just look at this and say, it's not the case, right? Like they just were. And she said she's wrong now. I just go, well, yeah, but at what cost?
Mm-hmm.
Right now that you're wrong, you're like, oh. Oops.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way, right? Lives are impacted here. We're all going, you know, go buy an airline ticket or fill up a tank of gas or, you know, go to the grocery store. And you're like, oops,
yeah.
Gotcha. That's how we roll. So anyway, well, look, there's the music. We're out of time for the day. So the story is inflation is real. It's going to impact portfolios. A lot of it's already priced in the market. What comes next? We're not sure. Join us for the next program. We can talk about that too. How do they reach us, Matt?
541-375-0898.
All right. If you need help with your investments, give us a shout. Otherwise, we're out of time. This has been David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.